I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Oh, everyone, look. We're here.
Yippee.
This is the Extra Hawk Rate Podcast, episode 616 for the week of May 25th, 2026. I am Suicide of Crows, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Confused Old Woman, Sarah D. Bunting.
Why'd I come in here?
Community Center Banee, Tara Ariano.
You throw one orgy. I thought this was America.
And rejected Stranger Things monster, Devendra Hardawar.
This isn't the 80s.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Before we get into the episode, it is the end of our broadcasting month almost, so we want to remind you about the Extra Hot Great Club. Our paid subscribers are the reason we can do this podcast at all, and they get perks, ad-free versions of the Wednesday episodes, special events like the Drunk Dave episode this past Sunday, and a big bonus episode every Friday. We've never taken off a Friday episode, and the more supporters we get, the more segments we add. We are tantalizingly close to unlocking listener game time. So you can join for $5 a month, $4 a month if you can make an annual, and help us keep making the show. And as always, if you can't afford the membership, tell a friend about the podcast. Word of mouth is actually huge, and we've been seeing more of you do that on Blue Sky. Thank you. But if you can't afford it, extrahotgrate.com/club. We love you either way, or you can also join through Apple if you just want the audio. Now, our guest is a writer and podcaster you've heard with us before, although not in our episode on the Audacity because he got too sick. It's Devendra Hardawar. Welcome back, Devendra.
The pitcher of
Devendra.
Hello. Happy to be back. Maybe I feel like a more fitting episode as I'm thinking about my health and stuff now. Yeah.
True. We are, in fact, talking about The Burrows. Retired engineer Sam, Alfred Molina, had planned to move to a New Mexico seniors community called The Burrows with his wife Lily, Jane Kaczmarek, but she died of a stroke 5 months before Sam is reluctantly dropped off there by his daughter Claire, Jenna Malone. Initially, Sam is just determined to get out of his contract, but lets himself be talked into socializing with his neighbors, including a welcome barbecue hosted by Jack, Bill Pullman, where he also meets retired journalist Judy, Alfre Woodard, and retired Dr. Wally, Dennis O'Hare, who end up being the perfect investigative partners when extremely weird stuff starts happening. The show was co-created by Jeffrey Addis and Will Matthews, who formerly, among other things, co-developed Netflix's 2019 Dark Crystal series, Age of Resistance. The show was also executive produced by, among others, the Duffer Brothers of Stranger Things fame. All 8 episodes dropped on Netflix May 21st. We may talk about events from any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Devendra, should our listeners watch The Burrows?
Yes, it's great. Mainly for this cast. What a cast. I love Alfred Molina, but having him hang out and smoke weed with Clark Peters, Alfre Woodard is always great to see. As always, Gina Davis, stunning in her older years, too. So it's just, I love seeing this cast hang out with each other. I will say the supernatural parts of the show are probably the weakest because CG monsters are not scary, folks. Like, I don't know. I tapped out of Stranger Things after 2 seasons. That whole idea of the big scary CG monster, I don't care. Give me X-Files. Give me, like, mysterious monsters. Give me things you halfway see. Beyond that, the cast is amazing. And this setting is great. It's fantastic.
We're going to let you get away with that very long Chen check-in because you know David Chen. That's the only reason why.
Sarah.
No thanks.
Dave.
I am sort of with Devendra on the cast part of it, and I felt like that carried me through, which was otherwise a little overstuffed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we did watch all of it, but my feeling about it is roughly a paraphrase of Ronnie from Frisky Dingo.
Hey, come on,
guys. Thank you, Ronnie.
It's complicated enough without all this evil twin bullshit having.
You know what? That is
Actually, that's a pretty good point.
Too complicated, I felt.
Okay, so can I speak to the complication? Because this was my big problem with the show. And I agree with Devendra. Like, the cast makes the show extremely watchable and edible.
100%.
It does fall apart at the end, even with that. But this is basically a vampire story. Mm-hmm. Twilight's here, old people. Here we go. And we're all thinking about death. And here is this vampire setup. Except it's not a vampire. There's these monsters and there's brain sucking and there's all this sort of stuff. So it is like vampire story plus, 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 plus. And it's all these pluses that sort of like weigh down what could have been, I think, a more streamlined, compelling season of television. It's novel until it starts stacking and stacking. And then it's like, oh, okay, you got to start. Like, it's a vampire standing in front of the mirror. And tragically, he can't see himself in the mirror, so he doesn't know the four things he should take off.
Yes, that is very well put.
Devendra, do you agree with this critique?
Well, I did not get all the way to the end, but based on the first few episodes, I'm just saying I'm really digging this. I'm really vibing with it, mainly because I love these people. These people are great. The banter is great. There's a scene of all of them by the campfire, just comparing their surgery scars. Like, there is, I think, like, humanity given to older folks that we don't typically see on TV. Mm-hmm. And I remember visiting my grandmother in an old folks' home, and it was not great. I felt very sad about that whole setup. So what this show is kind of exploring in that respect is really interesting. I've not finished it, so I don't know where it's going to be going. But describing it as a vampire story is kind of like Midnight Mass is right there. You know, it's right there on the same service doing a really interesting new vampire story. Why even try that?
Yeah.
Right.
One of the things I did enjoy about the cast working together and being retirement home age is that there were no rapping grandmas in this series.
Not in the main cast. You see rapping grandma tendencies at like the Pilates class or whatever.
Right. But not as a driving force far away from Cocoon and Cocoon the Return that I didn't get those vibes where it's like, all right, we can do it. Let's put on our fedoras. It's like, you know, it's like that Simpsons commercial for Buzz Cola.
Right.
It's like, I don't need that. And this isn't that. And I did appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, part of the premise of stories where kids stumble onto a supernatural infestation, let's say, is that the adults in their lives don't believe them. Is a story where seniors are similarly disbelieved by the adults in their lives the logical next evolution of this trope, or kind of condescending? Sarah, you were a no on the show, so what do you think?
Yeah, I thought that that tension was actually enough and should have been able to sort of carry it. I'll give them credit for immediately showing us a monster, but it's like if you start at a Stranger Things times Man on the Inside place, like, I'm into it.
Man on the Inside Out.
Yeah,
sure.
Thanks.
And the cast is really excellent. And I do like a recent trend in at least prestige side TV of not just assuming that everyone over the age of 45 is rapidly turning into fossil fuel and has no plot left. But I just, I don't know. I would have wanted to keep going more and liked it better if I hadn't seen the creature, because I just feel like there was like a strong Black Mirror sci-fi, like the potential of the unreliable narrator at the other end of the actuarial table, I guess. So much potential just with that. And then it's the thing from The Descent. And I was like, oh, now I got to go rewatch The Descent, which I would rather kind of do then keep going with this. I am not trying to talk anyone out of watching it. Just for me, it was like the thing that they should have taken off had already suctioned itself onto my face and it was too late. Yes, Dave.
Did it feel to you that this was more of an Apple TV show than a Netflix show? It had that kind of vibe to it to me where it was like, look how expensive this is. And here is our sci-fi concept. You know, maybe we're going to nail it, but probably not quite, which is sort of like what we say a lot about Apple TV shows.
But Constellation and Dark Matter and blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
In the first episode, Sam, the lead character, Alfred Molina, is visited by Jack, played by Bill Pullman. Bill Pullman just barges into his house. He's still unpacking, has some brews with him, and just like ignoring any social cues that he's not welcome here. That is probably my biggest personal nightmare.
I thought that while we were watching.
Somebody coming to my home with alcohol, trying to be my friend when I want nothing but solitude. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. It was harrowing. Might have been the most harrowing part of this whole horror show.
It's rough moving into a new place. Yeah. I've had that happen to me when I moved down to Georgia. It is weird because I don't know if I want to be your friend. I don't know you.
Yeah.
Get out of my house.
Yeah, we're lucky to have pretty good neighbors here, but there's been times where you're like, uh-oh, I guess we live next to a mob family.
That's a different sci-fi show that mm-hmm. we will not be pitching around.
Yeah.
Devinder, you were nodding with Sarah. You agree about the monster.
I agree. CG monsters are not scary. There's nothing scary. There's zero scariness seeing a weird CG creature on screen. I just got out of watching The Mandalorian and Grogu as well. It's a movie that is, again, hero versus CG creatures. There's no tension there. It's not that interesting. We know how to do this. The X-Files did this with, like, not much. I mean, I think of, like, tombs. I think of, like, all the weirdo creatures in the X-Files where it's often hidden. It's not, like, even, like, a huge special effects budget sometimes. It's just what's implied is scarier than showing me the thing. And if you show me the thing and it's not that interesting or scary, then you better be bringing it with the rest of the show for me to really care. Thankfully, these actors, like, made it worth it. But, yeah, I didn't care. And that's same thing with Stranger Things. It's just not that interesting.
Yeah.
No one has retained the lessons of Starship Troopers, which is the more angular they look, the better they will age, you know?
For sure. Yes. I'm naming this one Polygon.
Don't give it a face. That's going to be your downfall.
And also, a lot of those were practical in the movie Starship Troopers. They had a lot of great practical effects. And that God, blend so is what you need.
Yeah. It is.
So let's go watch Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
Let's go. Okay, cool. I'm from Buenos Aires and I say we watch it all.
So we've been watching a lot of shows lately-ish where, you know, something strange is happening in a community like The Burbs and Widow's Bay, which, like, I think this is better than The Burbs, not as good as Widow's Bay. Widow's Bay is more ambitious. It's a different thing every episode, sort of under the umbrella of one weird place. The other comp for this, in addition to Man on the Inside for me, was Thursday Murder Club. And so let me pitch this as an alternate of how this show could have gone. Monster Hunt is a stealth activity for a certain type of resident who doesn't want to golf or play pickleball. Mm-hmm. And is there really a monster? No, but there can really be a hunt. That would be like the Black Mirror twist on it, where it's like, there isn't actually anything here. This is just to keep you occupied.
Senior snipe hunt.
Yeah.
The village. It's the village, basically. Yeah.
That's kind of great.
Yeah. I liked that they sort of incorporated that idea for, like, the memory care patients.
Yeah.
They're just, like, replicating life. Like, this is how they do it in Scandinavia, I think, in senior communities like that. Like, there is a bus stop, and you could just go and wait there, and you will be safe, and maybe even take the bus somewhere short and within the community. But you could have a different version of the monster hunt. But that was sort of the most compelling part in the first couple episodes for me is Ed Begley Jr.'s character being like, can I come home? I mean, that, you know, I have an aging parent that sort of hit me when he's like in the hospital. He's like, Sarah, come get me. I'm like, I can't. You're hooked up to stuff. You got to get better first and then I'll do it. But there is definitely that like unreliable narrator thing with older folks who are in the hospital that it's just like, what is actually happening? What percentage of this is happening? What timeline are can I map onto to answer questions? And that's just me and things I've been going through with my family in the last 6 months. But that part I thought was interesting enough, especially with this cast. And then there's creepy, sticky spider guy. And it's like, oh, well, now I don't care as much.
Yeah. We talked a bit about the cast up top. Here's where we marvel at how good everyone looks. For how old they are. Gina Davis, 70. Alfred Molina and Alfre Woodard are both 73. Alfre Woodard looks like she could walk back into St. Elsewhere. Like, she just looks the same to me. Clark Peters is 76. And as I was watching him in one of the scenes, I was like, he was already the old guy when he was making dollhouse furniture on The Wire. And that was like 20 years ago when he was our age now. That was a rough one to realize.
Styling. He was wearing the like crossover sweater vest and half glasses from the drugstore and also dollhouse furniture. Like it ages a character.
Yeah. I also like Dennis O'Hara a lot.
Yes, he was good. And he is the baby of the group. He says at one point his character is 62. O'Hara is 64. So shout out to Renee. Gina Davis's character for giving an alternate term to body count with back catalog. This came up on a recent Dawson's Creek episode. It's like, I hate body count too. Yeah. That's pretty good. I'm going to steal that. How do we suppose the idol from Raiders of the Lost Ark ended up in Edward's storage unit? And why doesn't Sam just sell it and move to a nicer retirement community, Dave?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. But the thing I found interesting after seeing that is there were audio cues that really sounded like when they're spelunking around the temple at the start of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, there is no big, giant John Williams-esque themes in this show, but the incidentals part of it were very reminiscent of those quieter moments in Raiders of the Lost Ark and Star Wars and stuff like that. And I really did appreciate that part of it, because you don't get that a lot anymore. You usually get either just one note for 8 seconds Law and Order synthesizer soundtracks, or you just get just sort of this, like,
the Inception Brahm.
Yeah, the Brahms. Yes.
Still doing that.
Exactly. So I did appreciate that quite a bit. I mean, the guy is still in South America with like 7 spikes through his head and chest. So I don't know how that got there. I mean, it could have been like a repatriation. Maybe his family ended up owning the Peruvian museum where it got back to. And then, like, you know, some shady grandfather of his brought it back. But you know, usually those Easter eggs were like, where it's like center frame, don't do it for me. But I wasn't really expecting it in this show. So
no, it was cute.
It was cute. And they did, like, not just for him, too. There's a Thelma and Louise bit for Gina Davis. So, you know, everybody got their
due. And Dee Wallace Stone with, you know, has her E.T. moment as well in the cold open. So, yeah, it's not terrible. And I will give it credit, too, it doesn't do the Netflix thing where it's constantly re-narrating shit from the same episode that you are watching.
Yeah.
It was less retelly than I've seen lately.
There was one scene that was obviously a Netflix network note that I was like, come on, guys. And it was the scene where one character explains for like a good 20 seconds the story of the boy who cried wolf to another one.
That was shocking.
Like, it's not like one of the characters was a kid or something. Like, these are grown adults talking to each other. And I was like, okay, I know the Netflix audience skews younger, but come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
All right. Two more things before we wrap up. Questions for everybody on the panel here today. One, how would you deck out your icon golf cart? Everybody in this show has a golf cart in the garage. They drive around the boroughs. Sam arrives. His son-in-law has given him a 70s flame.
Like a Hot Wheels.
The Hot Wheels car version of it. But what do you guys want on yours?
Wonder Bread spots, like in Talladega Nights.
Oh, cute.
Yeah.
The girl I went to high school did that on her giant inherited station wagon.
That's nice.
That's a good idea.
I mean, Sarah, I think you'd probably be really happy with the golf cart because you like them tiny cars.
I do. Yeah. I do. I think I would just get a candy apple red and then a personalized license plate.
Okay. That's lovely. Devendra, what do you want?
Wallpaper it with bumper stickers, because I don't like bumper stickers on my normal cars. They're ugly. They just, like, they hurt the paint and whatever. Yeah. Golf carts, like, whatever. Hey, by the way, let's not make fun of it. We should all, if you live in a suburban area, it'd be great if you could get a golf cart and use that to go to the store or whatever.
Sure.
Down in Georgia, there are some towns here where, like, they have golf cart networks, and that's an electric car. That keeps, you know, you from burning more gas. It's a good thing. So yeah, give me the bumper sticker golf cart.
He loves the earth. I've seen a couple golf carts around here, actually, driving up Shoal Creek. So they exist here as well.
Yeah.
Smaller numbers. All right. Last question. How bland do you think the Mexican food is at a retirement home?
Oh, boy.
Because there is a giant sombrero-shaped Mexican restaurant in the middle of town square.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to have lots of good restaurants in your twilight years, but I got to believe that Tex-Mex or wherever they're serving there, their Southwest Mexican, isn't so great.
Yeah, it's watered down, mild paste picante salsa.
Exactly.
Yeah, not even. It's just like tomato, like chopped tomatoes from the can.
I would say I used to get Mexican food in my college in Western Massachusetts, and Western Massachusetts trying to do good Mexican food doesn't work. It does not work. So I imagine just bland, nothing rice flavor like that. Yeah.
But they love it.
Got a lot of shows. It's a great time for shows.
All right, everybody, it's time for Around the Dial, where we bring something we've been watching on TV recently. First up, Tara.
Yes, I watched Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed. This is Apple TV's newest dramedy. It premiered last Wednesday. Tatiana Maslany, I don't know her, but I do think of her as a sister because she is also from Regina, plays a magazine fact checker named Paula. She's also a single mother to a pre-teenage daughter named Hazel. She and Hazel's dad, Carl, who is played by Jake Johnson, are in the middle of sorting out their custody arrangement because Carl has been remarried to a woman named Mallory, played by Jesse Hodges, and they want to move from New York City to Boise so that Mallory can accept a big promotion. Seems like it would be the other way around, but whatever. So Paula already has a lot going on before Trevor, Brandon Flynn, the cam boy that she has an ongoing internet relationship with, gets attacked on camera during one of their sessions. Paula records the attack with her camera and brings it to a police detective named Sophia. This is Dolly De Leon from Triangle of Sadness. Sophia tells her the attack is probably fake and the first stage of a scam to get money out of Paula. Is it real? Is it a scam? Or is the truth somewhere in between? This is a show, Sarah, you would like, because when Paula gets frustrated by the police making assumptions and dragging their feet, she uses her fact-checking skills to analyze the video that she takes and get a lot further investigating than the cops care to, at least at first.
Process.
Exactly. Yes. Also in the mix are Charlie Hall and Kiara Hamagami Goldberg as Paula's fact-checking colleagues, who also happily let themselves get drawn into Paula's drama, and Murray Bartlett as an associate of Trevor's. If it sounds like the kind of idea that would make a better movie than a series, I thought that as well. But then I've continued to watch. I've watched the whole season. It earns its size and scope with a lot of unpredictable twists.
How far back in the past does this take place?
It's current.
So what you're telling me is a current show about a magazine fact checker?
I know.
Canada.
I did spend the whole season like waiting for her to get laid off, which, spoiler, does not happen. But that was like more traumatic to me than any of the many murders that right. happen sure. over the course of 10 episodes. Yeah. I will have a piece about this at Speaking of Magazines, GQ, later this week. Will it be fact-checked? I don't know. Not my business. For now, I will plug the last thing I wrote for GQ, which is a review of the final episode of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and we will link that in the show notes.
All right, Devendra, what have you been watching on TV recently?
I've been watching a lot of Animaniacs because Apple TV had the deal, whole season or the whole series for like $20. Like, hell yeah. I got to get the kids in on the good stuff. Enough of this like modern cartoon stuff. And my daughter is 7 now and she's ready. She's ready for a little wacky cartoon action. And it totally holds up. Like, this show is so good. I've forgotten like how musical it is, how just like energetic and smart the writing is. There's some stuff that I feel like, you know, they always lean into like mature jokes and like my daughter has no idea what's going on. So it's totally fine. That was kind of the magic of Animaniacs. It's still good. The character's great. And my son, who's 4 years old, is also really into it as well. So we're slowly going through it. And it's just like, it's pure gold. Like, it's pure gold. It has such a different energy than modern cartoons. I grew up watching Animaniacs. So this was a show. It feels like it feels good to see something maintain its like quality level even over time. But yeah, I'm loving it.
That's nice to hear.
First thing I always think about when somebody says Animaniacs is the fingerprints joke that I can't believe they put it in the show. Jesus Christ. It's just how they got that one through. I'm just like, all right, good on you guys. Well done. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google that.
They got away with so many things in 90s cartoons, and that was like my era as a kid and as like a young teen, and like it was perfect. And I guess that relates to Aqua Teen Hunger Force too.
It's a good show. I watched it and I was, you know, I'm probably 10, I got 10 years on you at least, I'm going to guess. I still watched it. It was just a really funny show.
So good.
So Devendra, I listened to you on the Engadget podcast. By the way, I'm just going to say this is going back a couple months now, but there's no reason why you shouldn't use your AirPods Pro and nod and do that in public, because you have to do it a few times before it activates. So you're not going to do it accidentally. That's my tech tip for you.
Nope.
That may be a thing to try. Yeah, it's like I'm not a fan of like any automatic gesture recognition things because they go bad. Like, it may work 80% of the time, but that one time it goes bad makes your life hell.
But where can people find you? We got the Engadget podcast. What else you got out there?
Yeah, and at the Slash Film Cast, but over at the Engadget Podcast, I just want to say we had a great episode with the founder of CE Critic. We talked about all that new TV technology, so your audience may be into that, because there are RGB TVs out now, and OLED has gotten really cheap. I just got a 77-inch OLED TV for like $1,500. It's Shit. Insane out there. So
oh my God.
Listen to that episode.
Big-ass TVs. That big.
Yeah, big-ass TVs are cheaper, and OLED, my beautiful, beautiful OLED that I've discussed for like 10 years, it's still kicks ass. So that's, you know, check out that episode for more info and all that.
Awesome.
Yep. Yeah.
Sarah D. Bunting, what do you got?
I've got Gary, which is a standalone and a question mark episode of The Bear. It dropped a couple weeks ago now. It took me a while to get around to it. And the sense I'm getting from other TV watchers who are sort of like, oh, let's just get this last season of The Bear over with, is that everyone's just like, got it in the to watch queue. Anyway, this is about Richie and Mikey, Dog Day Afternoon on Broadway castmates, Eben Moss-Bacharach and John Bernthal, respectively, doing a MacGuffin-y errand for Jimmy in Gary, Indiana. And I don't know, man, like this is the same conflict that I'm still having with the show overall. Richie is my favorite character. Both of these actors, along with guest star Martin Ireland, are great here. I have a higher tolerance than many for the Bear's let's resubmit character facts already in evidence fart huffing, but that tolerance is not infinite. The fact is that we already know Mikey struggled not only with his mother's disease, but with likely having inherited some version on it. Even within the Gary episode, there's the self-destructively hateful interaction that caps the action in the bar. But even that is repeating not only a pickup basketball scene from earlier that did the same work more subtly and was in any case doing the same work that Fishes did two seasons ago. Sorry, Dave, for the trigger mention. So as well as it's acted by Bernthal, as searingly as he conveys the characters knowing that he's being cruel but also unable to stop himself thanks to cocaine, whiskey, and self-loathing, we already have all this information and we have had it for years, plural. We do already know Mikey was both a magnetic personality and very difficult to spend extended time with. We do already know that in the present, his family's reverence for him is fraught. We understood without the interstitials of literal, scorched, literal earth, what is happening here. As so often happens, the Bear is very good at creating world and mood via character, and it knows its own strengths, but then doesn't seem to understand how to proportion them. And it's not that nothing happens in the hour. I don't need everything to be a plot machine in any case, but I did already comprehend this situation perfectly well already. Every person on Earth has known and loved and mourned assholes. This could have been half the length. For my plug, The Crash, a recent high-profile documentary at Netflix. Everyone was talking about it. I think it's still sitting close to number one on the movies list on Netflix. I reviewed it at my true crime review blog, Best Evidence, bestevidence.fyi. We will link it in the show notes. And Confidential to Ambrose, got your note. We're working on it.
I want to do a quick Drunk Dave episode follow-up, what happened after I immediately stopped the call as soon as the last note of the end clip was done. Zoom call over. I would do what I would call the orangutan run to the bed, where I'm like arms out, hunched over to like reestablish a lower center of gravity, because that's the only way I could get there. And then I flopped on the bed and Tara took a picture. You can see it somewhere on the internet, I'm sure.
I also looked after him, but I took a picture as well.
I don't know who is more I think the dogs were more concerned than you were, frankly. But anyways,
the dogs haven't been through this before. I have.
Very happy I successfully got on the bed. And then about 30 seconds later, I'm like, I gotta get off the bed and get to the bathroom. So I was doing the orangutan walk to the bathroom, immediately threw up. It was terrible. This is the first time that's happened. I mean, I say the first time. This is the third time we've ever. I do one of these about every 5 years, and I think this is going to be the last one, because everybody who suggested alcohol this and alcohol that, nobody suggested just stick with what you had before, Prosecco and orange juice. That was the way to go here, because these fucking Moscow mules just destroyed me. It made me feel terrible for like a 36 hours later. So that was my journey after the fact. But
Pam,
the actual episode, was super fun to do. Thank you, everybody showed up. It filled up super fast, way faster than I was expecting. We only had 100 seats.
You remember that it was fun to do, or you were, I mean, you were not told by Tara that it was fun, because I don't think
I remember the first third was fun to do. After that, it gets a little bit fuzzy.
He had to edit it.
Did you also record the chat? Because that was some extra gold.
Oh, I didn't even think of that, but it's probably in Zoom, I'm going to guess. I think they
saved
that.
Like the Dave burp analysis happening in various threads was very good and accurate, as it turns out.
Yeah, so we ate some toast, some mac and cheese after. Eventually, I think this is me finally being completely sober again. So anyways, thank you to everybody who showed up. I think everybody had fun. Thank you for all our judges. We did 6 tiny cannons in a row. A little less cogent at the end, I'm going to guess. But I had fun. I hope you had fun. And it's never going to happen again. So I hope you enjoyed it. So here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday. We're going to be talking about the Marvel series Spider-Noir, a black and white Nick Cage vehicle.
The Sony Marvel series.
Yes, that's right. The not-quite-Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. Talk about it briefly on our summer TV roundup show, but we'll get into it in more depth. And then we want you to come back next week. We're going to be welcoming new guest Sophie Brookover to talk about Star City, the For All Mankind sequel series. We'll see you then.
Space show, but with a Russian accent.
Yes.
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
You're friends with an old person?
Yes.
I cut everyone off at 40. After that, you're dead meat. That's why I'm the master.
Shake.
What? I don't see you lining up to see old people.
Well, that's only because it smelled awful. I mean, I would go if the people were younger and didn't reek of fluids.
It is time for the canon, and like the lead topic, my canon pitch this week is a story of time coming for all of us. This episode is a poignant examination of society's discomfort dealing with the old and infirm, full of real truths that can lead to serious self-reflection. This is Aqua Teen Hunger Force's series conclusion to the trilogy featuring MC Peepants, a rapping demon who takes many forms but always sports yellow and red eyes, a shower cap, and a diaper. We first met him as MC Peepants.
Okay, a couple of years ago, you were a 6-foot-tall spider. They wanted us to help you drill a hole into the earth to unleash demons to run your global diet pill pyramid scheme.
What?
And then as Sirloin.
All right, what about this one? A year later, you were a cow. They tried to get us to bring all our garbage to you so you could use flies to evaporate the walls of a bank so you could get the money and... so you could get the money to rent patio furniture that you hadn't paid for yet.
And then at the start of this episode, season 3, episode 6, Little Brittle, Frylock, that's the guy that looks like a giant order of fries, has the suspicion that Meatwad, that is the childlike wad of meat, has got sucked into a new incarnation of this rapping demon.
Please come visit me, dog.
Well, back in 1912, I could kick your ass. I did the tango and the sock trap before it got banned. There was ragtime and jazz before the ever was rapped. Now I'm trapped with the colostomy bag in my pants.
Oh, no. Oh, hell no. We are not doing this again. No way.
Yeah, well.
This is MCP pants, isn't it? Isn't it?
No.
Okay, fine. Sirloin, right?
No.
Okay, well, who is it then?
Yes. Where are my eyes looking?
Will you just tell me who he is? Because I'm not going to look at your poster.
This is Little Brittle and the Sea Bag. And he's kicking it. Elderly school.
So the song you heard there was Please Come Visit Me, Dog. And the album cover features a decrepit old man in a blinged out wheelchair and oxygen tank supporting a diaper and a shower cap sitting over his yellow and red eyes. Meatwad adds some detail that starts to break down Frylock's suspicious defenses.
So I got liver spots bigger than Dalmatian dots. I'm all alone. Won't you please come visit me, dog? I got...
He just wants friends. He's old and lonely.
Well, we'll just see about that. Where's he located? 612 Wharf Avenue, right?
No. His son moved him to Tragic Castles because he's driving a wedge in their marriage, pooping and wandering off and messing up the shower.
Damn.
But wait, guys, it gets sadder.
I mean, they have nurses. don't they?
Yeah, but they don't go in there no more because he spits on them and calls them harlots and barks at them to get nude.
Oh, man. I hope we never end up like that, huh, Meatwad?
I won't. You will.
So they go to Tragic Castle's retirement home. Frylock is tagging along, half out of suspicion, half out of pity at this point in time. But Meatwad, never meet your heroes. Meatwad immediately has regrets about going to visit Little Brittle at the home. But like a parent forcing their child to say hello to their weird grandpa, we get this.
Come on, Meatwad. He's happy to see you. He wants you to hug him, see?
I don't want to.
Oh, homie. Why you gotta play me like that?
Give him a hug, Meatwad.
So the script flip of this iteration of the MCP Pants saga is that MCP Pants here, Little Brittle, genuinely has no idea what's going on or who his visitors are, much to Frylock's surprise. Like, where is Satan's master plan for MCP Pants here? Seems to be nowhere. We're not engaging in that. This guy just seems like his lights are half off. Convinced that Little Brittle is creepy but harmless, Frylock leaves, and Meatwad tries to make small talk with him.
Are you gonna put out any more jams?
No, man. My label dropped me. They said that songs like "Uh-Oh, Polio" didn't connect with today's youth.
Yeah. Also, you slept through a lot of them songs, right?
It's not all bad news, though.
Today's applesauce day! Applesauce day, dog!
Welcome to the soundboard. And then I'm going to say, the best visual moment of the episode, Frylock returns to see Meatwad curled around Little Brittle's squishy neck, softly gnawing on it with his one big tooth. Little Brittle thinks Meatwad must be a vampire, which really confuses Frylock.
Why would you even think he's a vampire?
Why the hell do you think I released Come Visit Me Dog in Transylvania, yo?
Yeah, that was an import. I paid extra for that.
See, I released it in Transylvania so vampires would come and visit me and I could get them to bite into my neck and then I could become immortal. Why the hell do you think I made myself look so sexy on the cover?
See, I knew it. I knew some bull was up with you. I knew it.
Look, yo, Brittle needs to live forever. Otherwise, I go down to hell and Satan send me back here something worse. He's got all these ideas. He don't tell me none of them.
Why don't you just become a Christian?
Yeah, that way when you die, you go to heaven. Away from bad old Satan.
Well, can I do that? I mean, are they cool with vampires? Because I got to feast on blood. That's how I roll.
Look, you can't be both. Either become one or the other. And the other, which is a vampire, is impossible.
Well, then I guess I'm a Christian. Oh, yeah, bringing in the sheaves, y'all. Who knew I had it in me? I did. Now kill me, quick.
We're not going to kill you. The moral thing to do is to let you die naturally, alone, in a pile of your own filth.
So then the doors burst open and a flying and rotating coffin comes into the room. And it's Dracula, Little Brittle's number one fan, to Little Brittle's rescue.
Little Brittle.
No way.
Do I know you?
Oh my gosh. I so love your record. You're so cool.
Well, Rocket.
So Dracula makes Little Brittle a vampire. The plan has worked. He has escaped Satan's clutches finally, until about 3 seconds later, he walks outside into the sun and explodes. And then Dracula races outside to make sure that Little Brittle knows not to go out the sun. And then he explodes. The end. Mm-hmm. Except I'm going to want to play you out on the end credits bit of Please Come Visit Me, Dog. Here it is.
Please come visit me, dog. The residue of many who are about to die. Emit from the treasure castles, which I now reside. Come before seven. That's when they close the blinds. Coming down, see my watch, which is no surprise. I suck applesauce. Do a bendy straw. When I poop, all the nurses come in and applaud. I used to...
So these are the things where I say, like, this is a very honest betrayal of aging and society's willingness to turn a blind eye to things and the treatment of our elderly. I think, like, Aqua Teen Hunger Force is just like putting it all on the line here, saying this is what it is, America. Are you ready to deal with it? So that's the episode. It's the stoner cartoon with the most honest portrayal of how little anyone wants to care for old people, deal with old people, visit old people, or be old people. And I want to say, I didn't know when Devendra picked this that we were going to have two shows that deal with life-sucking spider creatures in the same episode. But here we are. It's a little bit of kismet on top of everything else. So there you have it, folks. A very opinionated stoner comedy talking about the very real issues of elderly care.
Thank you, Dave. Devendra, you selected this. Please start us off. What did you think of the episode, of Dave's argument, and so forth?
I will say this was not always like one of my favorite Aqua Teen Hunger Force episodes. I love the show when it was on when I was in college. So I was like, perfect setting, perfect time for me to be into this weird stoner comedy. I live close to Atlanta now. Like, I should just visit William Street and just, like, I don't know, lay a candle there for all the joy they've given me over the years between this and Space Ghost and everything. That being said, my favorite episodes have always been like the Moonanites. Freaking love the Moonanites. They are instantly hilarious to me. But Dave, your impassioned argument has really tipped me over on this episode. Like, I think it's there's a lot going on here. Like, I didn't laugh as much as some of the other, you know, Aqua Teen Hunger Force episodes, but this is a special one. And it does conclude a multi-episode arc, which is something I always like. So yes, put it in the canon.
Thank you. Sarah, why don't you go next?
I enjoyed this a great deal. I would not have gone with a even satirically serious, pitch for this, but it works for me. I love that it's a fully realized rap performance, fully realized hip hop experience. The collection of syllables, Metamuse, amazing. Immediate cannon fodder as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
I also liked just the little visual touches. Like, there's a weird sort of like hybrid animation style where some of it is very Hanna-Barbera-esque. Some of it is very like weird CGI realist. And the blend, especially when it comes to Little Brittle and the ear hair, the teeth and a glass next to his bed, which I think is just like a photo that they dropped into those frames. And also the visible Frylock anatomical poster is like suddenly my favorite thing ever, and I
love it
to have it on a t-shirt. Please note that they colored to the absolute edges of the paper, I think is a hallmark of this show, which I'm not that familiar with, but they really, like, this was the premise and they just exploded the entire premise like a vampire on the porch of an old age home. And now they're done.
Yep.
Very enjoyable and very funny. And I won't. You will.
I know.
Really is a pretty penetrating insight about how some middle-aged people are just like, well, I mean, but I'll just like roll into traffic. I'm not going to be this person. And then things happen in your life. But yes, excellent presentation. Thank you.
Just two things that Sarah mentioned. One, the teeth in the jar that you mentioned, they're like sitting there and they seem to be just like a cutout from a clip art book or something like that. That in the same scene, Meatwad puts them in. And they're the exact same orientation they were in the glass. Just like, they look like a stupid grin of gums and teeth on his mouth. It made me laugh out loud seeing it again. And then just worth mentioning, there is a very small amount of Moonanites at the cold open. There's a Moonanite moment with a crank.
I got excited there for a second. It's like, oh, they're back.
I have pitched a Moonanite episode in the past.
I think so, you have.
Yeah. All right, Tara.
Yeah, it truly does in 11 minutes what it took the Burrows 8 full episodes to do across its whole season. Like, it really, and Sarah, coloring to the edge of the paper is so true. There is not a second that is not joke ridden of this. It's so economical and so packed full. I mean, I'm glad that you brought up the teeth, because I was going to. Meatwad hold with MCP Pants teeth in his mouth is so cute. Really just in like a wide shot of the three of them, not commented on. It's just, you might not notice it if you weren't actually looking. Meatwad is, of course, my favorite character. One of my favorite characters in probably all of TV. He is so cute, and nothing is cuter than him wrapped around Little Brittle's shoulders with his one big tooth. Like, just the pain in his eyes, looking so distressed while he's been made to do this vampire task.
Yeah, he's doing that, but the way they animate it, his neck seems like it's like pulled pork.
Yeah,
you know, if you stuck your finger in pulled pork repeatedly, ooh, that is sort of like the animation going on here.
It's not great, but this episode is very funny. The rap is a great point too, Sarah, that it's Little Brittle and the sea bag is just another throwaway joke that's so good. All the lyrics are great. And then when he decides to become a Christian, bring it in the sheaves, y'all! Like, it's just so funny. Dave, I think you made a great point. It is extremely hilarious in the course of making a very serious point about elder care that I think we all took on today.
I got to be honest with you. This was my Mademoiselle Caroline style one. I was just like, this is not going to get in because it's super opinionated and it's a stoner comedy, which is a hard sell to a lot of people. But yeah, I pleased his punch to find out we got a, sounds like a 3 of 3. We're going to make it official in a second.
Yep.
Pretty happy about that. All right. Devendra, canon worthy or not?
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
And Tara.
Dog.
In honor of Sandy McTyre, who we call MCP Pants when she grunts at us to be let outside. Yes.
All right. No. So. That means Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Season 3, Episode 6, Little Brittle. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Today's applesauce day! Applesauce day, dog!
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and loser of the week to be revealed. Sarah has this week's winner.
Speaking of old guys with ear hair, because of The Departed. Anyway, my winner is Ben Affleck, who will be narrating Hulu's docuseries about Whitey Bulger. That's going to be a three-parter slated for later this year. That doesn't make me more or less likely to watch it, but I'm always hoping for that Whitey Bulger property that is not going to lull me into a black and white movie-esque torpor. There's just something about, I liked The Departed, and then there was the end with the rat, and after that, my brain just slammed the door closed and locked it on this topic. But I'll try to check it out. I think Baffleck might be a perfect pick for not just this, but Boston crime generally.
Sure.
All right. And who is our loser of the week, Tara?
Well, speaking of non-Italian mobs, our loser of the week is Tom Hardy. He is the lead in the show Mobland, which I believe we talked about on Extra Extra Hot Crate.
Oh, good old Mobland.
Mobland, sure. Also another alternate pronunciation. He is fired ahead of the expected third season of the show. They've just finished shooting season 2. Only the first has come out, but he clashed with producers reportedly, specifically would show up consistently late throughout season 2 and would show up and change dialogue and fight with people. So that's a thing that can happen. Get fired from your own show. I mean, it does rarely, but I'm surprised that he is not a producer on this. And if he is, and they still figured out a way to get rid of him, he must have been a huge problem. So way to go.
Let's be fair. The show doesn't exist. It's called Mobland. It's on Paramount Plus. Nobody
has watched it. We watched
nobody,
all of it.
Nobody did. Nobody has seen
it. It's not MGM Plus, Devendra.
That's true.
It's better than Gangs of London. I'll give it that.
It was better than The Agency, too.
I know. You're the Gangs of London person that turned
us on
to that.
Gangs of London season 1. Come on. That is.
fight.
Great.
All right, guys. Well, speaking about getting pelted with metaphorical pretzels, do you know what time it is?
I think it's game time.
It's game time, first of the season. Welcome back, everybody, to Game Time. As we mentioned, this is the first of our brand new season. Today, we are playing Also Connect from Eleanor, who earns herself an extra credit topic of her choosing, plus a free shirt at our store at throughmethods.com. Two rounds today in Also Connect. In round one, you need to guess the category all the clues are in. You get up to 4 clues. The sooner you guess, of course, the more points you get. 4, 3, 2, 1. You get to guess after every clue, Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you.
In round two, you need to guess the 4th item in a sequence. You'll get up to 3 clues. And again, sooner you guess, more points you get. 3, 2, 1. And you get to guess after each clue, Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you.
All right. Also, if you answer correctly, you get a chance at the bonus point in which you explain the nature of the sequence. So up to 4 points in each round.
Okay.
No steel meals. Let's go to Picky to see our order today.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. So our order is Tara, Sarah, and Devendra. Are we ready to play? Also connect.
Yes.
Yes.
I guess.
All right. Let's start off with Tara. Of course, guess after each clue if you want to or pass. Here we go. Item number one is pineapple.
Next.
Sea urchin.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Okay. Milk.
Next.
And finally, squid. Pineapple, sea urchin, milk, and squid all have this in common. One of them relatively recently ties into things.
Okay. I do not know. If it's not SpongeBob, I don't know.
All right. Well, we don't have steel meals, but anybody have a guess on this one?
Iron Chef challenges?
Oh.
Iron Chef ingredients. Yes, Iron Chef challenges is correct. All right. No points for Tara on that first one. Sarity Bunting, here we go. Your first item is a red handbag.
A red handbag. Project Runway prompt.
Your second item is a lamp.
A lamp. Things you can win on Price is Right.
Your third item is a gavel. A red handbag, gavel. A lamp, and a gavel so far.
Things that Judge Judy has on the bench.
All right, last clue.
I think I got it.
A vase with flowers in it. So, a red handbag, a lamp, a gavel, a vase.
Things that blow up in the good fight or good wife credits.
Yeah, good fight is the correct one here. We'll give you that for 1 point on the board.
I will take it.
Devendra, here we go.
Oh, boy.
Your first clue is Dumb and Dumber.
Buddy comedies?
Your second clue is Spaceballs. Keep in mind, these are all TV questions.
Yeah. Things that got unnecessary sequels?
Men in Black. I dinged you on that one, but gave you on that one, but don't get too discouraged. Dumb and Dumber, Spaceballs, Men in Black.
Oh, things that have gotten animated TV series.
You are correct, and you are in the lead. 2 points. Our next clue is Beetlejuice.
Good job.
Live-action films had animated TV follow-ups. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Marriage Story.
Next.
The Hours.
Next.
Kramer versus Kramer.
They're all about divorce. Next.
Finally, Walk the Line. Marriage Story, The Hours, Kramer versus Kramer, and Walk the Line. All have this in common.
That is TV related.
Mm-hmm. Ties into TV. It is a TV category.
I don't know. I don't know.
Anybody have a clue here?
Oscar winners starred in... Oscar winners who were also in Big Little Lies.
You are correct. Movies and actors in Big Little Lies won acting Oscars for. Nicely done, Sarah. Tragedy, no points there.
Yeah.
But here is your first clue, Sarity Bunting. Fan fiction. That is title cased. Fan fiction.
Fan fiction. Dumb titles of Dawson's episodes.
The Bittersweet, as in a room, not as in tooth decay.
Sweet. Themes of Trading Spaces episodes.
Song Beneath the Song.
Categories on Super Password.
Fan fiction, The Bittersweet, Song Beneath the Song, and Once More with Feeling.
Musical episode titles.
You are correct. Yes, that was Supernatural, Grey's Anatomy, Xena, and Buffy. Back to Devendra. Your first clue is Ugly Betty.
Pass.
The Mole.
The Mole?
The Mole.
Pass.
Dancing with the Stars.
ABC Primetime Series?
Finally, The Office. You got Ugly Betty, The Mole, Dancing with the Stars, and The Office.
Oh, American shows that were rebooted from other countries.
You are correct. Yes, Colombia, Belgium, and two from the UK there. 1 point. Back to Tara.
Yep.
New York Yankee.
Next.
Writer.
Next.
All right, this is in quotes, so I'm going to put air quotes on the delivery. Financier.
Jeffrey Epstein Jobs? I don't know.
Oh. And finally, furniture designer.
Oh, Kramer Jobs.
Mm.
No. Shit.
Anybody want to take a crack at this? Occupations mm-hmm. held by people Carrie dated on Sex and the City.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
Deep cut. Good.
Sarah. Investor's dinner. Investor's dinner.
Hmm. Things Mike Brady lost the plans on the way to.
First annual PI2A symposium. Might be Pi2A, I'm not sure. First annual PI2A symposium.
Events held at the Bellage.
Third clue, Steve Gutenberg's birthday.
I don't know. Next.
Kyle Bradway is Nitromancer. Two possible answers here, I'll accept.
30 Rock promo, like fake shows on 30 Rock that were promoed during
No,
it?
Unfortunately not. Tara, do you know this one?
Yes, it's Party Down episodes.
Party
yes.
Down episodes, but also Party Down catered events on
right.
the show.
Oh, yes. Of course.
Gutenberg sold that one.
Yeah. Should have known yeah. that from the last one, but did not.
All right, to Devendra, your first clue is karate sluts.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Pass.
Shark Cop. Shark Cop.
Oh, TV shows from 30 Rock.
Casual Flosser. Karate Sluts, Shark Cop, Casual Flossers. I'm going to give you a hint here. You are so in the ballpark.
I know. It's something. Something.
Yeah.
Pass.
Any guess here? No? Last clue?
No. Mm-hmm.
Liz Rocks. Liz Rocks. So, Karate Sluts, Shark Cop, Casual Flosser, Liz Rocks. Pithy little titles here, but what do they all have in common?
Something 30 Rock. I don't know.
Well, you were right. It was from 30 Rock. Tara, you're a 30 Rock enjoyer.
Yeah, if it's not fake shows, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's words on Frank's trucker hats from 30
Rock. Oh, sure.
Damn it, Frank.
All right, everybody's got one question left in round one. Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Daddy-o.
Next.
Battery Park.
Next.
ER.
Yeah, next.
Yeah, next. Friends. So, Daddy-O, Battery Park, ER, and Friends.
NBC Thursday shows.
Called.
Called?
Yeah, collectively known as.
Oh, must-see TV shows.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to give you the point.
Must-see TV NBC shows.
Okay, give you the point. You're right.
Okay.
What year can you get it?
94.
No, not even close. 99, 2000.
Mm.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, last one of round one. You've got Swinging Pendulums.
Seems like the classy thing to do would be not call attention to.
I got swinging a pair of swinging pendulums.
Yeah.
Speaking about old people.
Your mom's a Swinging Pendulums fan. Groups on So You Think You Can Dance.
Silly String.
Iron Chef ingredients.
Conveyor Belt.
Nope, pass.
And finally, joining Swinging Pendulums, Silly String, Conveyor Belt is Vertical Runway.
Silly String, Conveyor Belt, and Vertical Runway?
Yeah.
Ugh. Jesus.
Swinging Pendulums, Silly String, Conveyor Belt, Vertical Runway.
Obstacles on Holy Moly?
So that's what I was thinking too.
You were halfway there.
Is it Wipeout?
No. Stuff they threw or did to runway models on America's Next Top Model.
Wow.
Of course, yeah. The pendulums.
That hag.
All right. Devendra will get this last one for round one. Your first clue, Ferguson. Ferguson.
Clarissa explains them all characters.
Oh, no. Vincent. Nice. Ferguson and Vincent.
Pass.
Ferguson, Vincent, Brian.
Pass.
All right, last clue. Ferguson, Vincent, Brian, backup.
I got nothing.
Oh, no. Wait. No, go. No, we're going to allow it.
Okay, characters from Veronica Mars.
Oh, well, you got one of them right, but you didn't get them all right. Anybody else got the answer here?
They're TV pets.
TV pets, yes. Okay. Ferguson the cat from New Girl, then dogs from Lost. Vincent, Family Guy, Brian, and Veronica Mars back up.
Brian.
All right, that's round one. Let's hear the scores, please.
Okay, I have one. Sarah has two. Devendra's in the lead, smashing us both with three.
Nice. All right. One, two, three. We've got two questions for everybody. You still can get 4 points here, so I think it's anybody's game. We're going to start with Tara. Reminder, the answer you need to provide, no matter where you are in your hint sequence, is the fourth item.
Right.
Here we go. Your first clue is Star Trek Enterprise.
Next.
Hacks. Star Trek Enterprise, followed by Hacks.
Next.
Downton Abbey.
Next. Oh, that's I don't know. I have to say the fourth one, and I don't know what it is.
All right. Anybody have a guess here? There's many, many, many possible answers because we were talking about a show that takes place in the 22nd century, then a show that takes place in the 21st century, 20th century. Then we just needed something in the 19th century, like Gilded Age or Anne with an E or Dickinson or something like that.
Sure.
So gotcha. That is Sarah D. Bunting. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Richard Dawson.
Richard Dawson. Steve Harvey is my answer.
What?
Ray Combs.
Okay. So now, oh my fucking God. What is his fucking name? Peterman. Okay, next, I guess.
Louis Anderson.
Yeah, god damn it. It's John Cocktoasted. He also hosts the National Dog Show. Oh my god, could I get like half a point? Something?
Anybody got an answer here?
Oh, O'Hurley? John O'Hurley?
That's who you're thinking of, but that's not the answer.
Yes.
Oh, it's fucking what's his nuts from Home Improvement.
Oh yeah. Shit.
Richard fucking
Richard Karn.
Guy. Yes, that was the answer we were looking for. Family Feud host in Beginning Order from
I am angry.
Yeah. Angry. All right. Devendra, you can extend your lead here.
Not gonna happen.
We need to know the fourth item in the sequence, or a fourth item in the sequence, as we heard in the first question. Your first clue, Boston Legal.
Next.
Home of Whitey Bulger. Your next clue is Nashville.
Next.
Dallas. Boston Legal, Nashville, Dallas. What is fourth item?
The OC?
Nope. You're so close. Nope. Anybody want to put a guess in here?
Oh.
911 Nashville?
Good morning, Here Miami.
Nope. Nope. Boston, Nashville, Dallas, anything that's a city named show west of Dallas would have completed that sequence.
LAX.
So, Beverly Hills, 90210, so LA close. Law. You were so close with the OC, so but close. It's not a city. So we couldn't give you that point, but
that's a rough one.
Well thought out.
Yeah.
All right. Everybody's got one question left. Are the scores the same as they were? 3-2-1?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Your first clue is Golden Girls. Golden Girls.
Next.
Empty Nest. Golden Girls, Empty Nest.
Next.
Nurses.
So Golden, what? Golden Palace?
Golden Palace does, yes, complete the sequence. But now you have to tell me what the sequence means. What is the nature of the sequence?
They're all in the Golden Girls universe.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's the order they premiered.
Yes, you are correct for another point. We had 85 for Golden Girls, 88 for Empty Nest, Nurses 91, Golden Palace next year in 92. God. All right.
Let's never speak of that again.
So I think we have a first place tie at the moment between Tara and Devendra. So
correct.
We'll see what happens. Sarah D. Bunting, you can get in the mix here with your first clue. 95, Bergen. 95, Bergen.
95 Bergen. Mm-hmm. 99 Falco.
96 Hunt.
Okay. 98 Parker.
97 Hunt. Those are your three clues. 95 Bergen, 96 Hunt, 97 Hunt. I need the end of that sequence.
98 Cox.
The correct sequence was 95 Bergen, 96 Hunt, 97 Hunt, 98 Hunt. It's a Hunt hat trick for Best Comedy Lead Actress Emmy winners in chronological order, starting in 95.
Brother Mike owes me a beer.
Okay, Devendra.
All right, I'm out.
You need a point.
Ugh.
Here we go. Your first clue is Carrie. Carrie.
Next.
Fantasia.
Next.
Reuben. What is the end of that sequence? Carrie, Fantasia, Reuben. Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Kingdom for a steel meal.
Got seriously.
I got nothing.
Got nothing? Nothing. All right, it's going to get interesting. Yeah. All right, provide me with the answer, other people.
Is it Kelly?
Kelly.
The answer is Kelly because...
they're American Idol winners in reverse order.
Starting with Carrie. Yes, Carrie, Fantasia, Reuben, Kelly, Clarkson.
Clarkson.
Like a, that question is like a nuclear bomb.
All right. Well.
Got nothing.
You were busy watching Animaniacs. Nobody
I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. End of regulation. Scores, please.
Sarah has 2 points and Devendra and I are tied with 3.
Ooh, okay. Oh, here's what's going to happen. I have 2 tiebreakers, so let's do it this way. I'm going to give you each one of those tiebreakers, and then whoever gets the most points wins. And if it's a tie, then you each get a point.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Good luck.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
Are you ready, Devendra?
I think so.
These are audio clues, but they're all like round one. Okay? They just all belong to the same category. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Guesses here?
80s theme songs.
Good guess.
You so right, you can't be wrong. Rocking and rolling all week long.
Something theme song.
Something theme song. All right, do you want the next clue?
Yes, please.
Got him on the spot. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Theme songs that became really popular singles.
I'm going to give you one more clue.
Okay.
You get the best.
You were in the ballpark on the last one. I'm going to give you that clue.
Theme songs that had music videos?
Yeah. No, these are TV themes. That was Miami Vice, Happy Days, Welcome Back, Cotter, and Hannah Montana. That all made the Billboard Hot 100. They actually charted.
So close.
All right, so no points there. So Tara just needs to pick up 1 point here for the win. Tara, are you ready?
Yeah.
Here's your first.
You said you'd never love another Russian doll.
Next.
I believe I'll run on. See what the end will be. Believe I'll work on. Find out what waits for me.
Next.
I'm glad I got my.
Are these theme songs that were sung by a star of the show?
You are correct.
Wow.
Oh,
that was
nice.
Bored to Death with Jason Schwartzman's band Coconut Records.
Sure.
The second one, anybody know this one?
I believe I'll run on.
Nope.
See what the
Oprah, the time she learned to sing and recorded her own theme song. Then we had Living Single by Queen Latifah. And her final one was...
Boy, the way Glenn Miller played.
All in the Family. Hey. All right. Now we need our final scores. Well fought, everybody.
Okay, Sarah finished with 2, Devendra with 3, I somehow won with 4.
All right, woo! Nicely done, everybody. Thank you, Eleanor.
Well played.
Today, first game of the season, Tara wins.
Tara.
Thank you so much. Fun game. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We retired in front of our TVs for Netflix sci-fi raisin conspiracy series The Burrows before going around the dial with stops at Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed, Animaniacs, Gary, and a Drunk Dave follow-up. Dave made everyone visit him and listen to him talk about being old and filling diapers. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Eleanor. Next up on EEHG, we're going to be talking Spider-Noir and then Star City on EHG Prime. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
he's incompetent at being continent.
Sarah D. Bunting,
golf is stupid.
And Devendra Hardawar.
Seriously, this isn't Stranger Things?
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra. Oh, great.
Jesus! Shut up!
That's it.